another thing I have learned over the years is, you know, success and happiness does not equivocate Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be so successful and happy doing so many other things besides Broadway. Broadway's not end all be all. It's certainly something I want to check off the list,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the end goal.
There are many wide and varied paths that individuals go down when seeking a career in music.
These paths are long and winding and oftentimes have bumps along the way.
What lies at the end of these paths is a career, not based on fame and fortune,
but a fulfilling career defined by a passion for creativity.
This is a podcast that shares the stories of those individuals
and the paths they have taken to become who they are today.
This is
Learning to Become.
Learning to Become.
Learning to Become.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Learning to Become, Exploring Careers in Music. My name is Mindy Cook and I am your host. Today I have the privilege of letting you listen to a conversation that I had with Chase McCall. Chase is a musical theater performer who currently resides in New York. He has been in productions such as the 20th Anniversary International Tour of Rent, as well as most recently, he was Dwight on the Office parody musical. Chase is a phenomenal singer and musician. I got the opportunity to attend a couple years of university with him. We both attended Western Carolina University, and we're both transfer students. So we both spent the last part of our college careers at Western. He talks with you about how, of course, he got to where he has been, just as all of our other guests do as well. But he also gives you some little stories, and you can just tell that he is a storyteller and loves to talk about his passion and his artwork. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. Even if you're not interested in the least bit in taking a career in musical theater, I still think he offers a lot of great advice that you can apply across many different career fields.
Yeah, I'm always like, where to begin? You know,
yeah.
I'm almost 30 and I'm feeling the pressure.
Yeah.
I born in Salt Lake City, Utah, was there for the first 7 years of my life and then moved to the Carolinas and was there for the majority of my adolescence to adulthood before I really moved to New York. So yeah, lots of moving around as a kid. I didn't really get into music until I was forced into piano lessons when I was 10. I come from a pretty musical background. My dad was in bands growing up, and my mom was in choirs a lot as well growing up. So definitely had a good base for it. And I had a decent singing voice, but didn't really do much with it until much later. So for me, it was when piano came into the picture. I was very begrudgingly forced into lessons. I was not happy about it at all, because I was definitely more into sports at the time. Mm-hmm. Quote unquote sports. It's a podcast, so
you gotta tell me you're
there. And so I just remember doing that first lesson and then being like, wait a minute, this is cool. I felt like I was naturally good at it, and I picked it up so quick. I had progressed very, very quickly when I was doing private lessons for about 5 years. My teacher picked up on my sight reading very quickly, and so I learned, when I mean zero, I mean zero theory. I didn't know how to read keys. I didn't know intervals properly. I just knew I could read what was on the page and do it very quickly. So I go to my lessons, play what I had practiced in the past week. We would review the next couple songs, do the right hand, do the left hand. Okay, come back next week, put them together, boom. And it was just just nonstop. So it was really cool to really feel like I was excelling at something, because with, I have a brother who's like only a year older than me, and we were always neck and neck in sports and everything. He was always better than me. Mm-hmm. So I felt like piano was mine. I felt like I had something of my own for the first time. So that was really awesome. And so it wasn't until I went to a performing arts high school when starting at 10th grade. So 10th, uh-huh. 11th, and 12th. I went to this really, really awesome Magnet Arts High School in Charlotte, North Carolina, called Northwest School of the Arts. And I originally went in as a piano major, of course. And then I discovered musicals and performing on stage and dance. And that's where that love really started coming through, and choir as well. I loved my choir classes. Like, once again, I just kind of flew through to the advanced choir and was like assistant to the like piano teacher and like helping other students and everything. So took on and like choir leader, like section leader and all that stuff. So yeah, just really, really flourished in high school. And I loved it. I loved it so much. So that's where the theater really came into the picture. Mm-hmm. And accompanying as well. Like, I really picked up accompanying. I would play for the choirs, I'd play for my friends and in class and everything. So that was a skill I didn't know that I had. That was super useful. And it's still, I mean, it's provided so much for me today as well. So yeah, that's a little bit about my upbringing.
Yeah.
Does that answer that? Any?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The most part. Yeah.
So then you went on to where did you go to college?
So first college I went to was UNC Pembroke in North Carolina. I definitely was one of those kids in high school who didn't know quite yet what he wanted to do. Like, my instincts were telling me to be a teacher. So I was trying to enjoy musical theater as much as I could, because I was like, oh, this is not going to be my career. You know, I might as well enjoy this while it lasts. Like, my senior year, I had to decide between advanced theory class or the advanced musical theater class. And so I was like, you know what? I'm never going to perform on stage again, really, like this. So I'm going to take my advanced theater class, and because I know I'll be immersed in theory like crazy in college when I'm trying to become a teacher. My high school choir teacher, who was also the theory teacher, was not happy, but you know what? I had to make my own decision. Uh-huh. And so, you know, in terms of like academia, you know, average student, you know, I didn't excel in the liberal arts, you know, English, science, math was my favorite subject, but you know, I was just a fine student. And so when it came to like applying for colleges and really going for it, it didn't work. I just didn't really go for it, uh-huh. you know, because I was still so new.
Yeah.
So to like the whole theater scene. And so I only applied to two schools. One was UNC Pembroke and the other was Western Carolina University for musical theater, mm-hmm. And for education. So I was still so green at everything that I got waitlisted at Western and I got into UNC Pembroke. So I was like, I guess I know where I'm going. I ended up going to UNC Pembroke for 3 years. And then after those 3 years, I actually transferred to Western to finish my undergrad, which was very like full circle.
Yeah.
Because even going back a little bit, I originally wanted to be like a concert pianist. Like, I wanted to go to Juilliard. And my choir teacher in high school was like, you're not good enough to get into Juilliard. Like, you're talented, mm-hmm. but like Juilliard, that's a different level. And I was like, well, I'll show him. I actually auditioned for the high school program at UNCSA for piano. Sorry, I know I'm like jumping all over the place.
No, you're fine.
with my When I was in 10th grade at this Northwest School of the Arts, I auditioned to be 11th and 12th grade at UNCSA, University of North Carolina School of the Arts. Super prestigious high school and college. It was tuition-based, even though North Carolina residents was free for high school students. So like, you know what, Northwest is cool, but like, I'm gonna go to this other school and become a concert pianist and live my dream, you know? And I auditioned to be a classical pianist and I didn't get in. And that was tough, but if I hadn't gotten denied and then discovered theater my 11th and 12th grade year in high school, I never would have done it. And I would have been a miserable classical pianist because classical just isn't quite my thing. Yeah. So I was bummed, but then grateful that I discovered what I really, and something else I loved like intensely, which was theater.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was going into college and everything, I was going to be a teacher. I was going to double major as a teacher and a musical theater major at UNC Pembroke. And my first day, they were like, my teachers were like, you know, it's going to take you like maybe 6 years to graduate if you're doing a double major for both of these. And I was like, ooh, 6 years in school. Maybe I'll just forget about the education part and just do theater. I was like, if it's going to take me that long, I'll do theater. So that's kind of how I stumbled into theater, and it's worked out pretty well so far. And the thing about UNC Pembroke was that it's the musical theater major. It was a bachelor in music.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts, which is like when you're really honing in on like singing, dancing, and acting. UNC Pembroke was a Bachelor of Music, so it was very music heavy of a major, which I loved because I'm a singer, pianist. So it was very, very concentrated in, you know, choirs, theory, voice lessons, piano class, and all that stuff, which was really, really fun. And it was a really small school as well. And so 3 years went by and I kind of realized that music is not what I needed more focus in if I'm going to make this a career. You know, that there were some acting classes and some dancing, but like they weren't very focused on that. And I knew that's what I needed the most work in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to transfer, you know, it's going to be my last, I'm going what should be my senior year. And I'm going to go to a different university altogether. Because I felt like that's what I needed to do. So I auditioned at Western. I already knew the program director there. It was pretty much a shoe-in. I had grown a lot in the last 3 years since I auditioned previously.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a really great acting and dancing program at Western. So I was just like, you know what? We're just going to do it. And it's going to take me 2 years to graduate. And I did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So talk with me about after you graduated, what happened then?
Yeah. So after I graduated, I had already secured a summer job doing a production of Footloose down in Florida, in Fort Myers. I was Ren. I was the Kevin Bacon guy, which was really fun. So I went there and did that over the summer. And when I was there, I secured my first cruise ship gig, which I was very, very excited about. I kind of was persistent in auditioning and following up with the casting directors for that cruise ship job. And I had actually worked for the company. They're called RWF Entertainment Group, which is a huge entertainment company. They do theme parks, cruise ships, variety shows, like lots of really cool things. And so I had worked for them summer of 2013 at a theme park in Pennsylvania, a really small one. And so I already had an in with this company who was now doing cruise ships.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was doing the production of Footloose, I was following up with the casting director, being like, hey, like, I know this is happening. Like, here are my audition videos. And I kept kind of badgering them and everything, and, you know, healthily badgering them. Uh-huh. And, yeah, I got that first cruise ship gig, and that was the real game changer for me, like life changing, in terms of being able to travel, cruise ships, you know, at least at the time. I don't know what it's going to look like in this post pandemic world.
Right.
How lucrative it's going to be, but you know, for cruise ship gigs back then, I mean, financially it was a huge thing, and I didn't come from money, and I always was struggling with money. So to have this gig where it was really high paying and traveling and singing and everything, I got my health in check. I ended up losing over 50 pounds working on cruise ships for over 2 years. You know, finally got into a financially secure place. So that was a huge game changer for me personally.
Very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So how long did you do that for?
I did cruises about 2 years between the rehearsal process. I did one ship, and then I completed that contract. Very soon after that, went back into rehearsals for a different shows and a different cruise ship. And then did that for another while. So like just under 2 years total.
So whenever you're on the ship, how much time, like you're there, like for how many months in a row? Like,
yeah, it's for me, it was my first contract was 2 months rehearsal on land in New York City, in Queens, and on the ship itself for 7 months. And then very soon after I finished those 7 months, I went back to rehearsals for another 2 months. And then my second ship was 6 months long.
Okay.
That time. And it varies from cruise line to cruise line. Like I worked, you know, RWS is the talent agency that creates the shows, but the ships were Holland America that they were casting and creating shows for.
Mm-hmm.
So Holland America, their shows, their packages, their contracts are very different from Royal Caribbean, from Celebrity, from Norwegian Cruise Line, from AIDA. Like it's all very different. So I know Royal Caribbean, their shows and their contracts are about a year. Mm-hmm. So they're on the ship for a whole year, which is crazy to me because as much as I enjoyed my time, cruise ships, it's like a whole different ball game. Uh-huh. With, you know, being, you know, on a floating vessel, you know, you only get a limited amount of interaction with people. Internet is, you know, very scarce.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say that my cruise ship experience prepared me for quarantining. They're
yeah.
very, very similar
yeah.
feelings and experiences, honestly. Like the only difference was that I had good internet here this time. But on cruise ships, you know, it can be pretty isolating and limited people contact. It was very interesting, to say the least.
So what shows did you perform? Are they well known or are they?
No, they were kind of variety shows, original that RWS Entertainment Group had created. So my first show, there was a show called Marquee, where I was a lead singer on that contract on both of them. So one of the shows was called Marquee, and I was the ringmaster. And so it was like putting on a circus. And so I was like manipulating the LED screens and moving them around and introducing the acts and all that stuff, which was really exciting. This other show called On Tour on my first ship was very like concert style. It was like doing like popular songs, concert style. And then my second cruise ship was a different show package altogether. So it was another show called Off the Charts, where it was like number one songs over the course of like 50 years. So it was like Elvis and the Beach Boys, and it progressed like, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And then like we finished the show with the number one like selling songs of all time or artists, which was the Beatles. We did this whole Beatles like mega medley at the end of the show, and it was so awesome. So it was all original content that RWS Entertainment Group had created specifically for Holland America Cruise Line.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So take me past the cruise ship. Did you move to New York as soon as you were done with the cruise? I said
Yeah.
You said you'd been there since December 2019, right?
I've been here since I made the official move in March of 2017.
Oh, okay. So you're just saying you haven't left since 2019.
Yeah.
gotcha.
Exactly. Sorry, that was a little confusing.
No, you're good.
Because I had planned on moving after the first cruise ship contract, and I did. I moved with my sister, ready to make a life. And then the second cruise ship gig called my name. I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this again. So after the second cruise ship, I moved here officially, and I've been here. It's been home ever since. Those cruise ships really took a lot out of me. So I was like, I'm going to settle into New York life. No more cruise ships, even though the money is fantastic. I'm going to just take a break, start auditioning. I want to do real musicals. I want to do real shows. And I was auditioning, and I ended up booking my first national tour. It was a Charlie Brown Christmas. Mm. Just like the Christmas special.
Uh-huh.
That was my first tour, and I was an on-stage male swing, so it was my job to learn all of the male roles in the show. So Charlie, Snoopy, Linus, and in case anybody was not able to go on, it was my job to step in for them and make sure the show runs smoothly. And luckily, it was a very short contract because it was only Christmas time, about 6 weeks, and I didn't have to go on for anybody. But I was still on stage every night in a little ensemble role, still part of the peanut gallery, essentially. So that was an interesting time, just because it was a bus tour where literally we lived on a sleeper bus. We would mm-hmm. do a show at night, get on our bus, and then we'd wake up in a new city every day to do the show somewhere else. So very, very, it wasn't a Broadway tour in the sense that when you're in a real legit Broadway show, you're sitting down for sometimes a month or longer
mm-hmm.
doing the show in one place in one right. city. This was, okay, literally you're in a different city every single day doing doing the show.
Yeah.
So luckily it was short-lived, because that's pretty exhausting.
Yeah.
I had a really hard time personally sleeping on the sleeper bus, because you're moving around
right.
so much. You got to make sure that you're sleeping with your feet towards the driver, because if he makes any abrupt stops and you're sleeping with your head the other way, you could knock your head.
That stuff you wouldn't think about.
exactly. So that was really fun for a first national tour. And finished that, and I had already booked a production of Mamma Mia right after that, at the same place where I did Footloose, actually.
Okay.
So it's fun to go back and do that for a little while. It was pretty crazy, because I'd actually booked the national tour and Mamma Mia on the same day, which never happens.
Yeah.
I didn't audition for them on the same days, but I got the phone call that, hey, would you like this job on the same day? So I was feeling doubly blessed that day, which was really exciting. So then I did Mamma Mia, and then once Mamma Mia happened, during that time too, that's when I booked my first major national tour, and that was Rent, the 20th anniversary touring production of Rent, which was same set. Same blocking, same costumes. We worked with the original choreographers, music directors. Not the same director, not Michael Greif, who's a very, very prominent Broadway director. but his assistant who helped him stage the show back in the 90s, Evan Ensign, was our director for that. So it was super incredible to work on such an iconic show with the same people who brought it to life 20 years ago. Original staging, original costumes, everything. So that was really, really awesome.
Wow. Yeah. So this was a tour as well?
It was. It was a national and international
tour. Was it the same type tour that you did with Charlie Brown, or was it one where you stayed put for a little while?
Yeah. It was still a non-union tour, just like Charlie Brown was non-union. But this was definitely, since it was such an established show, we did have a lot of like one-nighters where it's just one night and we travel to a different city and do it again. But we did have sit downs in major cities like Chicago. We were there for 10 days. We were in LA for a week. We were in Philly for a week. We were in Cincinnati for 2 weeks. So there was definitely more consistency with that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. It sounds like you had, you said it was international as well. So where did you go?
So we went to Asia for 3 months. Yeah. Wow. So we did Tokyo, Japan for 2 weeks. And then we had 2 weeks off before we did China for 2 months, actually, which was really, really stellar. It's kind of crazy how it all kind of panned out, in the sense that we rehearsed in New York for the show for, I think, about 3 weeks. We teched the show over maybe the course of a week. I forget what city we teched it in. Oh, somewhere in Pennsylvania. We did the show in America for 3 weeks. And then we had 6 weeks off while the set traveled from America to Tokyo. So we had 6 weeks off, which was wild because we were like just getting started.
Yeah.
And we ended up, then we had to get the back together for about 2-3 days to brush up the show in New York before we all flew to Tokyo. A very thrilling 9-hour flight.
Yeah.
I think 11 hours.
Wow.
Of, time zone difference.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then we teched the show again in Japan and did it for two weeks, which was really crazy. And then we had 2 weeks off for the set to travel from Tokyo to our first city in China, in Shanghai, China. Did another like little tech to get the show ready. And then we went to a bunch of cities in China. We were in Shanghai for 3 weeks, which was crazy. That was the longest sit down we had in any city on our tour. And then we went to other smaller cities that like escaped me, Nanjing, Shenzhen. The other big city we stayed in for a while was Beijing for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Which was super, super awesome. Of course, we went and saw the Great Wall.
Yeah, that's
while we were
awesome.
There.
Yeah.
Which was incredible. And then we finished the tour, 2 months in China. And then once again, we had 6 weeks off after China for the set to travel back to the States. We did another tech and then did the show for an additional like 8 months after that in America with a quick little two-nighter in Canada. Yeah, international and national tour of that. So that contract total from beginning to end was 15 months long.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like you had an amazing time, though.
Yeah. I mean, Tokyo was out of this world, like incredible. The fandom over there is crazy. Like, they, in like the best way, though, because it's interesting, a show like Rent that people do know, you know, it's such a fan favorite that people love it. And we didn't do the show in different languages, of course, because that, you have Here, right, do Rent right. in English and in right. Japanese exactly. and yeah. in Mandarin.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Go for it. So we did have subtitles on the sides for Japanese and in Mandarin during our time there. But the audiences were so different than American audiences.
Huh.
In Tokyo, they're like the most respectful audience that I've ever seen and the most enthusiastic by the end of it. Because, you know, like before any concert in or show in America, you know, people are talking, people yeah, are excited, yeah. people are right. socializing, you know, getting ready for the show.
Yeah.
In Tokyo, they don't say a word.
Huh.
They just sit there waiting for the show. Just like we had to be wow. told backstage before the show, we have to be quiet because they can hear us talking because they weren't talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was like the craziest thing to get used to first.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, you know, they're not going to be super receptive to a lot of the jokes and, uh-huh. you know, and things that we're saying that we were used to getting in America.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, of course, you're just not going to quite get the nuances.
Right.
Because they're reading what we're saying. But still, like, the clapping at the end, the response, I mean, just elated, just so into it. It was crazy. And then when you get done with the show and you do, you know, the signature, the autographs and the line for just the autographs and gifts and things was crazy. It was really nothing like I'd ever experienced. I mean, I'm for Rent. I was not a lead character. I was in the ensemble, and I understudied Mark and Roger. So I wasn't the main character. So I didn't get quite as much attention as the leads. But even as the ensemble, like they were just huge fans, like gifts all the time and wow. everything.
Yeah.
I got my first fan gift in Tokyo, and it was a cheesecake.
Oh.
It was a cheesecake, and I ate it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a store bought, you know, prepackaged cheesecake, and I ate it, and it was very, very good.
At least it tasted good.
Yes, yeah, it was so good.
It's funny.
You know, pictures, drawings, everything. I mean, my favorite, this was actually, I'll show you, this is actually a gift in China, but I'm obsessed with it to this day. Don't know why I got it or the reason, but I did. I got,
oh, it's a Captain America Pikachu.
Yeah. It's a nice. Pikachu dressed up as Captain America.
That's
like,
fantastic.
I love Pokemon and I love Marvel. So this was incredible.
How did they know?
I don't know. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just amazing. And one of the top theatrical experiences of my life, top five, would be when we were our closing night in Tokyo. And we did a reprise of Seasons of Love. At the end, but we did it in Japanese. We did the main hook of Seasons of Love in we didn't do like the whole song,
right?
But when we did just a little bit in Japanese, they went insane. Just like crying and just so excited. And after we had finished the song and we went back to our dressing rooms, we were backstage. I was getting out of my costume back into like my normal clothes, you know, 5 minutes after we had finished the song, and they were still standing and still clapping.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
Just like, yeah. This was just, and nothing I'd ever experienced and still to this day had never experienced.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It was honestly incredible.
Yeah. That sounds like top notch. Like how do you top that in the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
where do you go from there?
I know. Nowhere but up.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So where did you go from there?
So where did I go? So after I had completed that tour, you know, very eager to get back to New York City and live in my apartment, because at this point I had traveled more than I had actually lived in New York City. I mean, I signed a lease and everything pretty soon after I finished my cruise ship. So I was very, very eager to get back home and just start auditioning in New York City. So about a week after I had gotten back to the city, my first audition back was for the off-Broadway production of The Office musical, a parody. And that was the wildest thing that's ever happened to me. My audition and callback were on the Friday after I'd finished Rent. So I got back Sunday, had my audition and callback on Friday. I had got the call that I had booked the show on Saturday, the following day. And they told me my first show was the next Friday.
Oh my goodness.
So 6 days later was my first show. So that was the quickest turnaround I had ever done in my whole life. I booked a Dwight Schrute, and you know, it was a monster of a role and a show. I mean, it's a parody, so it's just chaos with different characters. I mean, Michael Scott was played by a woman, which made it super funny. Like everyone played multiple roles in the Office universe except for Michael. So I played Dwight and I played Kathy Bates and I played Todd Packer. And so, you know, like Mindy Kaling also plays Oscar, and the character Kelly also plays Oscar in other roles. So it was just, I mean, it's just a whirlwind of a show. So that was insane. And I did that for about 3 months before I finished. And then not soon after that, the world shut down.
Yeah.
So I definitely felt like my career was going in a very good direction.
Right.
Up until the shutdown.
Yeah. And so talk us through that a little bit. So
the pandemic and everything.
Yeah. Like how have you been making a living? What have you been?
Yeah.
What's been going on?
Yeah. So much, but somehow nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's been such a enlightening time for me personally. I think the pandemic is the best thing that's happened to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, because as amazing as The Office was, it also run me down in a not so great way. So I wasn't in the best place after that experience and how that ended. And I was auditioning and just kind of losing my steam and my drive and excitement about theater, and wasn't finding much success in like the main audition season. I mean, from, you know, at least back in the day, January to like March, April is like peak audition. So you're just hustling, you're busting your butt. And I was getting really, really burnt out. Wasn't in a great place financially, unfortunately. Didn't have a grip on my finances at the time. Feeling really beat up and just unmotivated to audition, really. So when the pandemic took full force, I was kind of finding myself kind of retreating a little bit from auditioning and maybe getting into a different, maybe career field. I wasn't sure at the time. I just gotten a job working at a gym that I was really excited about because fitness is really important to me. So I was like, oh, maybe like just maybe a sidebar for a while doing fitness and getting excited about that. But then the pandemic hit, and honestly, I didn't do anything. You know, I really tried to stay motivated and creative. Because there's definitely that stigma and that pressure as an artist, like, okay, like you got to stay relevant. You got to put content out there. You got to make sure that you're still being seen by people that have influences over your career. Like you want to prove that you've been doing something productive and career building. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm taking a step back. I need the space. I need the time to heal from some things that happened during the Office, and just take a break from everything.
Yeah.
You know, I really truly felt myself being run into the ground mm-hmm. before the pandemic. And so I was like, okay, now I can rest.
Yeah.
Now I can take a break that I didn't know that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unemployment was a gift in terms of getting financially back into a stable place. And it really created the space that I needed to realize that I wanted to go back to school.
Yeah.
That's the biggest gift of it all, was that, okay, like I discovered that I want to teach again. It's kind of been like a full circle going back to my younger years of being like, okay, like I still want to teach, and how am I going to make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Cause I was actually, I do like weekly Zoom hangouts with my brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
And each week we have like a topic that we like to discuss. It can be anything from, you know, oh, if you could travel anywhere in the world or do any career and money wasn't the thing, what would you do? And like childhood memories and, you know, anything we can think of, favorite song, uh-huh. that kind of stuff. And one of the questions that someone had chosen was that if you could, your perfect career,
mm-hmm.
money wasn't an option, like, what would you do? And of course I was like, oh, duh, be on Broadway. Like, of course. But then I thought about it and I was like, if I could have my perfect scenario, I would be a teacher by day and a performer by night. And I was like, why am I not doing that? Why, what's holding me back, you know?
Yeah.
So I did my research and discovered NYU. And now I'm in the audition process for it. And I feel like I'm finally on the path that I was meant to be on.
Very cool.
And I'm super, super excited to go down that. Because I've been, you know, I've been a vocal coach since I've been in the city. So I help people prep for auditions and do accompaniment tracks and mm-hmm. Audition prep and learning music. And that's been super helpful in getting me where I am today
mm-hmm.
and preparing me for the next step of becoming like a collegiate level teacher. So I'm super excited. You know, as detrimental as this pandemic has been in so many different ways, globally, I mean, personally, it was one of the best things that probably happened to me.
Yeah.
So I'm nothing but grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to slow down and kind of reassess stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, reassess for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about when the world opens back up? Do you see more Broadway auditions in your future, or are you going to put that to the side, or what?
Yeah, I'm going to focus on, if I do get into NYU and it pans mm-hmm. out, I'm going to really focus on that, because, you know, it's going to be a slow reopening of mm-hmm. Broadway.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've, in terms of all the actors, you know, who were on Broadway, you know, they're all going to want their jobs back. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of the most qualified people are going to be out of a job. And so mm-hmm. as someone who is a non-union, it's, you know, kind of bottom of the barrel in terms of getting auditions and mm-hmm. All that stuff. I just can see myself struggling again to get back into the audition circuit, and especially adapting to how things will change
mm-hmm.
when we get back into it, you know. I'm kind of grateful that I'll be able to focus on school for a couple of years and make that the priority. And so once I finish there, ideally 2023.
Just 2 years away. Isn't that crazy?
I know. It seems forever away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully when I finish my studies, then we'll definitely be like in a swing of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be the more opportunity. So more opportunistic time to audition and be on Broadway, hopefully. But hopefully my dream of teacher by day, performer by night will become a reality. I mean, another thing I have learned over the years is, you know, success and happiness does not equivocate Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be so successful and happy doing so many other things besides Broadway. Broadway's not end all be all. It's certainly something I want to check off the list,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the end goal. Even before the pandemic, you know, it was like, okay, I'm definitely, one of my anthems for a while was Never Enough from mm-hmm. The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm on Broadway, now what? Okay, TV film, cool, let's do that. Okay, I have a Tony Award, what's next? Oh, original musical, what's next? You know, this kind of
borderline unhealthy idea of what the future is going to be, of just, oh, it's never enough, I need more, I need more. It's like, no, like, you can find the joy in what you have now.
Yeah.
You know, as always the next gig, you know, you got the gig, and then while you're doing the gig, you're thinking about your next gig.
Mm-hmm.
And there's beauty in stillness.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm here. This is a good place to be. Never for me. Maybe I'll have my own voice studio here in the city. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll work at a college. I don't know. But I'm very excited to really hone in on teaching now.
Yeah.
Very excited for that.
So that kind of leads me into like the final question is, what advice would you give to students who maybe either are thinking that they want to go down the musical theater path or just any sort of career in music? What do you think? Or what advice would you give them?
Yeah. No, there's so much. but I would say, first off, you just have to stay true to yourself and know your self-worth and your value. Because so many times for me, I had to break out of the mold and do what was best for me. I mean, like going back in high school, between the theory class and the musical theater class, I did what made me happy. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. musical theater. When it came to deciding a double major in musical theater and education, what am I going to do? Theater is what feels true to me. When deciding to go to Western, you know, it's like, I know I'm not getting what I need here at Pembroke. I know I can get what I need here at Western. I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Even my story with how I booked Rent, the tour, it was very much like, I had to leave my gig for a week, even though they didn't really want me to. And I had to go back to New York to do final callbacks for the show. And I had to do it because it was what was best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that's gotten me through the successes I have now, is just always taking care of myself to the best I can and doing what's best for me. Without getting too, you know, egotistical and you know, oh, I'm just gonna do it because I want to, and like, you know, I deserve this, and this is what I want and all that stuff. It was just like, you know what, this is what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the biggest thing I would love to pass on to anybody who listens, or even my own students one day.
Mm-hmm.
is just staying as true as you can to yourself.
Yeah. That's great advice, especially for younger students to hear who are not necessarily comfortable in their own skin, or don't necessarily think that they, you know, are whatever they think about themselves. Just to be mm-hmm. authentic and to be just to learn what you like and learn and what makes you happy and then go that way.
For sure. I mean, because that's another big gift that this pandemic has given a lot of artists, is just we've been able to discover what else we like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we don't have to be defined by our careers and by the instrument that we play and the voice that we have or anything. It's just we can have other skills and other hobbies and interests and passions outside of performing,
mm-hmm.
Which is so valuable.
Yeah.
And great to learn, especially at a young age. If, you know, it's invaluable to kind of get that mindset at an early age.
Yeah.
Us adults, we're learning it now. Yeah. Late 20s, and, you know, our friends in 30s, 40s, you know, finding other things they love to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it took having the whole world to slow down to kind of have to be able to figure that out. But
yeah. I hope, you know, we don't have to go through another pandemic to learn this lesson again.
Right. But hopefully now we,
I hope people don't forget it. I hope people really, really take these things to heart and roll with it. I mean, there's so much has happened in the last year. It's really unbelievable. So I only hope that going forward, we've all learned a thing or two.
Yeah.
About ourselves, about each other.
Right. Hopefully somebody can make the most of all of this craziness that's been going on.
I'd like to think that I have, at least. I haven't completely squandered all this free time that I
have. That's
good. Yeah.
I think that's all. So, yeah, thank you
also
so much.
Embrace the failures, too.
Embrace the failures.
Yeah. I, you know, not even, you know, maybe let's not call them failures. You know, embrace the non-successes. Because those are equally as valuable experiences as the successes. I mean, if I hadn't, you know, not gotten into North Carolina School of the Arts in high school, I would have ended up being a classical pianist. And if it wasn't for that non-success, I wouldn't have discovered theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So those, there are very, very valuable teaching tools in those experiences as well.
Yeah.
And that's the best I'll say of it.
Well, that goes back to being persistent too, not giving up whenever you have those non-successes.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the words of 2020 in terms of the pandemic is resilience.
Mm.
Is that resilience of like, okay, we're not giving up. We're not, you know, persevering. We're taking this and we're rolling with it and we're just going to keep going because you have to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that's it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mindy. I really appreciate it. This is so fun.
Yeah. And so we will talk to you later.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.